You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Hask. I don't know what that means.
Hello, Dream Team, and a very warm welcome to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, our good friends who are the leading provider of spread betting, CFD and FX trading. It's good to be back with you once again. We're still on tour. We're in Birmingham at the Alexandra Theatre, and tonight we've got the one, the only, Mr. Phil Vickery joining us. But we're going to do a show that's a bit of a Hask special this week. We've been looking forward to this for a while. So we're going to put you in with two of your former English clubs. At the end of the show, the Hoff has been to see someone very special, a former teammate who is a Lion, a Saint, and now a Welsh legend as well. But before then, because we're in the West Midlands, we are lucky enough to be joined by the head coach at Wasps, Lee Blackett, who I'm told also holds the record for the fastest ever Premiership try, 8.28 seconds. I did not know you had that gas in your locker. Were you offside at the kickoff? Or?
50 metres at that speed is fairly going. That was me at my best.
Back on a good day, downwind.
My only try.
Were you on a moped or something?
Mate, I think what it was, we were playing Newcastle. I can describe it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Because I generally watched it yesterday. Just remind the boys about, you've got people like Wadey talk about try scoring records and everything. Well, I've got one, mate. I only scored one, but yeah, I've got one.
Fastest.
So it must mean I'm very fast.
It is very good of you to join us. I'm genuinely fascinated to have a sit down and a chat with you. And I want to get into all things sort of running Premiership Rugby Club. But how are you, first of all? Where are you at the moment? Are you demob happy because there's one to go and you're nearly on your summer holidays? Or are you stressing about life in general? Where are you?
Stressing.
Are you?
until it's over then. I don't feel like it's the end of the season. I think we've had such a weird season in terms of, we had 20 odd boys out. We had pivotal guys to the club out for the first half of the season. We didn't get them back till end of January. So it feels like the season's been in two bit parts and scrapping and fighting for everything we had. I spent most of the time first half of the season acting as D for the team because we didn't have enough players to train against.
Still got it?
Sort of.
It's a 16-second try now.
Yeah, exactly. The old hamstring goes a couple of times in the way.
But then we get everyone back and there seems to be a load of energy. So it doesn't feel like the end. I think, obviously, we had a European performance recently. I thought we were really unlucky not to win. That would have been great to go to a final. And I think 6 days later, there was a lot of energy was taken out of tank in the build-up to that. We'd had 4 away games, 3 flights in the last 4 weeks. I think it took a lot of energy out of us and we were putting probably a poor performance against Sale. So that's taken a bit of energy. But a week off this week and our mood is we need to go to Leicester and get a result.
Do you send everyone away on the week off and say, look, you know, clear the head for one last push? Or do you want them all in and get as much out of it as you can? They're all in.
Yeah, there's things to fix and we've got to fix them quick because there's no tougher place to go at the moment, is there, than Leicester?
Yeah.
I was about to say, because carrying on from the Die Young legacy, the week off was never a week off, was it? Do you remember we used to get the charts out and he'd actually show us a graph that's where downtime actually we did worse afterwards? And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not true, but he managed to manipulate stats to you on that. That's tricky.
I like the ones where you've got a week off but you're coming in and if you don't reach this fitness test, you're getting it.
Right.
So boys didn't really have a week off. But Hask always had a week off. He'd come back from internationals and the man, he had his 3 weeks in Dubai.
Yeah.
So he came back to...
Really big bollocks.
Of course.
Yeah. So that Alan Whale said, no one really focused on recovering hard. You've got to recover harder to train harder.
You know, come on. But I remember we had this player, Alex Reid, who sadly retired. He'd always do unbelievable at training during the fitness. Because what they do is all conditions. I never understand this. Always fitness test at the start of the season. We're like, we're obviously going to be unfit. And then do it again. And then when you have a week off, we're going to test you at the end of the week. So you spend the whole time terrified, or I did. So I'll be running all the time. Not Alex Reid, he was on the daiquiris. He would be running up and down, and honestly, Dak would be coming out of his nose, but he'd always do unbelievably well, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he was fit as hell. I had him at Rotherham, literally came together, unfortunately. But he came, and I'll always remember his first start for the club. Hask had just gone away on internationals, and we played Northampton, we beat them at Air Place, and Hask rang me, and he said, congrats on the win, brilliant. I can't believe it. Rieder played well. Even Rieder was playing well. But that's how Rieder was. He had the worst rig of a rugby player. Didn't have the greatest attitude. Love a social. Loved to be part of the boys. But he just had a competitive edge to him that when it came to the game, just loved to win.
Because he was your player of the season, rather than the you left, wasn't it?
Yeah. He actually left Leeds at the same time. So he was in the academy, and I knew he was in the academy at Leeds. And I couldn't believe Leeds weren't playing him at the time. So I went to Rotherham then, took him. Yeah. Then we had a couple of years there, and then somehow found a way to Wasps. But the Rotherham owner wasn't very happy with it. I signed here, and next minute there, the best player followed.
I want to ask you how you reflect on yourself as a player. Because I can remember watching you Rotherham days and Leeds days. Did you get the most out of your career at that point? Do you have itches you wish you could scratch as a player?
Probably the reason I like Rieder is because I was probably similar. I just had a competitive side, like it is. That's the bit that drives me. Would I say I was the most professional off the field? Probably not. But when it came, and that's why I can tell boys that aren't.
Yeah.
So when I see boys and they're giving me some meat, I said, mate, I know that. Don't lie to me. I know you're lying to me because I did that. So I know exactly what you're doing. But I would say when it came to the game, I would get everything out of me because just the competitive side, I just hated losing. And I still, 9-year-old daughter, she cries. I've got to win. And she is exactly the same. And now I can't afford to lose because if I do lose, she rubs it in my face and that's a bit that I'm crying then.
Yeah. What do you challenge her on?
Pardon?
What do you challenge her on? Like what would be where would the competition
Ping
start
pong.
On everything?
Any game, anything.
Really?
Yeah, she's got this obsession at the moment. Like last touch. Last touch before bed, she's like...
Oh, really?
I'll be like led in bed and next minute I feel this hand come to me and she hits me.
Shut up. I love that.
It's just she will not let it go. And then she'll be walking off going, last touch before bed, I win.
I'd love to know that that'll continue all through your life.
Even when you're 90. Yeah.
So if you went on holiday and there was a table tennis table or something like that, you just get on.
I'd smash her at it.
No remorse.
No.
Yeah.
I'd try and make that competitive because she's not going to win. But at something like...
She's not going to win. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, for the first time since I was young, I went skiing and I took her on that, and that was class to be able to do. Yeah, she beat me at that. She's a lot braver than me.
Yeah, your bravery levels dip at that age. Yeah.
Are you a heavy snow plow or?
Sometimes just hit the deck. If I'm going too fast, just hit
the
deck.
Have a lie down.
But it's when you're going too fast, you think, I can't even hit the deck now. Now I'm in serious trouble.
That's an interesting choice to go skiing, though, as kind of a head coach. Because what happens if you did your knee trying to coach like that? Like the guy.
Were you at Worcester when I broke my leg?
You played? Was it football?
No, rugby. So I'd not played for 5.5 years, and I decided, you know what? Happened was Friday. It was a bye week or something along those lines, and I was back in Hull and went out and had a few beers that night. One of the guys was saying, "Oh, mate, you play for us tomorrow, I've got a big game." And this is Yorkshire 5. By the way, Yorkshire 5 is the lowest standard you could possibly play. Right. There is no standard below it.
Right.
Like we're playing like Hull Ionian sick team or something along those lines. There is no lower than this. And I've gone, "No, mate, I'm not." He says, "Have you got any boots with you?" I said, "Yeah, I've got Mouldies in my..." "Right, you're playing." Then they brought this head coach over who was an absolute psychopath. He like looked at me and went, "If you've committed, you're playing." And I was woke up the next day at the mother-in-law's, knock on the door, he rocks up. "Come on then, we're going." I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm actually going to have to do this." 15 minutes into the game, I broke my leg. And then I had to ring Di and say, "Di, I broke my leg playing rugby." And then I got a letter through saying, Right. Well, everyone then got a letter at the club warning everyone, if you couldn't do your job, you're going on basically £80 a week. So we had staff five aside. That was all cancelled. Everything was I basically ruined everything for any of the club. No one took any risk whatsoever.
That conversation must have gone slightly. What word for word happened?
I'm sorry.
What was he like?
Well, no, it wasn't a conversation with a text message. I wasn't brave enough to ring.
Fine. And what did he write back? You fucking idiot.
See you Monday.
See you Monday. That's
the
worst.
Now I've got 48 hours of sweating.
Oh, because it is like that. We're dying.
It'd be a great gag if you send that text, then he sends back a fake P45.
Yeah.
Just sign this.
As classic was with a letter, £80 a week. No extreme activity.
If you can't do your job, honestly, I was on crutches within... I should have been on crutches and completely off feet for... I think 6 to 8 weeks. I was running after a week. I was not going on £80 a week. Literally, my leg was screwed for about a year and a half afterwards, but I had to get through that. It just wasn't.
So you obviously coached Haz. Would you two, did you play against each other? Play with each other?
Yeah,
in the age group
against each other.
For Rotherham or something.
Yeah, my first year was Rotherham when they were really successful in the Premiership and we didn't win a game. At least London Welsh were worse than us.
Yeah.
That's always a positive. I've got a mini story on that one. I think we got some like four bonus points that year. So we had 4 points. I played. So basically the owner had a friend at Sheffield Rugby Club and he wanted all the young guys to go out on loan there. So he'd registered me to go there because he was trying to save them from relegation. So he sent us out on loan. I never trained there, never did anything there.
Yeah.
But then the next week I played Premiership Rugby and I was still registered for... I was basically registered out on loan. They'd been docked 5 points if it had come up. So I think underneath he just went, look, we'll keep it quiet. Yeah.
Not sure it's going to make a difference.
But he sat on -1 point.
What a very sad state of affairs. So... Because you were Mr. Rotherham. I remember covering your games for Sky and yes, it was lovely, some quite course, interesting
yeah.
days.
Yeah, oh yeah, I think it was. Was it I'll Andre tell you Bester? What, Hass would have suited it up there.
What was the owner? Because owner is Mike...
Mike Yarlett.
Yarlett. So he was an interesting character.
Yeah,
he
went it. So he was there in my first year. He did, when I went through the academy there, he was there in my first year and then the club went into liquidation.
Yeah.
I think Mike had invested loads of money and it just became too much. The RFU didn't want Rotherham in the Premiership. That's how it felt to everyone up there. Or it's at least what we were told anyway, puppeted into believing. And that was where we were. So he gave up. And then the new owners came in and credit to them. You only have to look at the businesses, everything. They pumped so much of their profits into the club. It's incredible now. So it's probably one of the poorest clubs in the Championship, but how those two kept the club going, and yeah, it was pretty special. But the difference between going from Rotherham to Wasps was remarkable. Like,
because you were
downgrade to a worse training centre? Was that when you came?
Right, so the training centre. So this will be the training bit. This is why I can't really go on Haslake, because I'm coming from literally. We had Tom Dunn come from Farley House. So he came up on loan. I think it was Farley House at the time. If not, it was wherever the training was. Farley House sounds better. Anyway,
yeah, it does, yeah.
Well, Mansion is way better than Lambridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lambridge was pretty dumb.
So we're going to Farley House. He comes up and he comes on loan and he comes straight into a forward session doing pick and goes. And he's like, what is that? He thinks he's got mud on the side of his face. He's got dog poo. look at his face.
But that was like so when we trained at Acton, it's a genuinely true story. So we trained at Acton for what? His session was over when you fell in fox shit. That's how they had it.
What would you prefer, dog shit or dog?
Well, Bob, because you know fox shit, there's always that thing that makes you blow blind, isn't it? Like kids get it the right way, it makes you blind. I tackled them.
Is that true or is it a myth?
Like, I don't know. I'm
not going to risk it out.
Yeah.
But Matt, try it.
Matt, I get anything to get out of yeah. One of these sessions, I'm taking it in. I'm eating it. Matt Everard, who obviously knows the coach that was, I remember I tackled him and I was like, fucking hell, Evs, you shit yourself. And he rolled over and he just fallen in a dog, in a fox turd. Had to go. And they, one night they sat out and there was something like 55 foxes. And the pitch was more turd than it was. And that was that. And then we went to Broad Street where if there were foxes, you wouldn't have been able to see the turd because it was under 6 inches of water. So
if you... Elite level sport. Yeah. Right.
It was better than what Haas made out to be.
Character forming.
Yeah.
Are you saying that because it's where your bread's buttered?
It was, yeah, correct.
It was like, I can't possibly go on record saying it was Gaffney.
Yeah, yeah. How's he stayed in a coaching role so long?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, always game. Be wary of a man who stays through multiple regimes.
Yeah.
Rule number one.
I was just friendly old Lee.
How did you therefore end up as the youngest director of rugby in English top flight game, weren't you?
Yeah.
How did you get given the keys to Rotherham? Was it a case of last man standing? Did you always know you wanted to...
Both stories of Wasps and Rotherham are so weird. Like, you think it would all... big interview, everything like that. But yeah. In terms of go Rotherham, I was there and I was doing a bit of player coaching in my first year with a head coach. He got fired. He fell out with one of the owners. He left in, let's say, October. Alex Codling came in, then started coaching. And at February, he was like, on this budget, how the hell? And the travel and everything. And
yeah.
He was getting frustrated with things, but it was mainly around the travel. He just couldn't do it with his family. So he decided to jack it in. So about February time, I'm sat there playing with all these guys and the owner said to me, you're going to have to do recruitment. I was like, right. So I'm having conversations with him next to me. I'm just a player for the next year, player coach. That's all I was doing. And I was like, you're not going to be here. And you're having those brutal conversations and I'm literally sat next to him just saying, right, come on, let's go and bash some people. And you're having, basically, we then started it speaking. I was on the panel, me and the two owners, and we were speaking to people and people would come in and apply for the job. I was obviously saying rubbish, just to get myself a job. That's not how it happened. But how it happened in the end, the owner just said, we can't find anyone, you're just going to have to do it.
We can't find anyone because you've actually got, I'll send out the emails, have them send them.
Yeah.
I'm writing them, just putting all the letters in the bin.
I'm quite enjoying getting rid of all these people.
I don't interrupt you, but I'm interested because I would describe you as a lovely guy. Like, you know, I think very, very...
That's not what you used to say.
No,
cameras are rolling.
I say a lot of other things, but I say you're a lovely guy. I can imagine it would be quite interesting for you to have gone from being a player and kind of one of the kind of lads and having conversations with people. How does that sit with you going, listen, you're not going to be here or we don't want you? How, that's supposed to be the hardest part when you transition from being a player to being a coach.
Honestly, it doesn't get any easier when you're a player. The thing is, it's savage.
Yeah.
It's like when you're having those conversations with players and you're saying, mate, there's nothing here for you next year. I'm sorry. It is brutal. Especially some as well. They've got families, everything. You can just see it and you see the dream shatter almost in front of your eyes, and it's that's right up there with one of the most difficult parts of the job.
Do you have a technique for it, or do you just rip off?
I'm sorry.
It's quite a theme developing here.
Yeah. You text them. Yeah. Switch your phone off.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
got to be up front.
Yeah, you've got to be up front and show empathy. Yeah. Understand the situation is. There's nothing for having that conversation aggressively.
Does it get easier or does it get harder?
Do you know, you get used to it in a different way because probably you guys wouldn't know. But honestly, when you drop a player, it's sometimes like you're getting rid of them. They're like gutted to a point sometimes. And they're hard conversations every week. So that conversation is a little bit worse. But honestly, some of the times you've got to leave people out, it's... deep conversation.
Is it very different for each player in terms of where you feel they fit? If they feel that, if you know that they might fit and do a job at another club, do you say if you need any help with anything like that?
That would be straight away. That would be, you would talk about them leaving and then straight away flip side, you say, right, I'm going to do anything I can to help you. If you need a reference, if you need me to ring clubs. There's players this season where I've rung clubs and said, look, he's available, or we've got a player that's playing in a different position in training. I'm saying, honestly, if I had room, I would be signing this guy, just to let you know. People aren't seeing it because he's not playing, but he's doing ridiculously well.
Yeah. I always think that's funny on references. You always write someone a reference why you should hire them, but why are you getting rid of them?
Yeah.
No, don't ask that question, but I'm here. He's great. He'll do really well for you.
It's always the legal obligation, isn't it?
But do you always, like, is it...
No, I'll be honest on a reference as well.
But do you...
Honest, I would always talk about the positive side, and you can figure it out on the negative.
But then would you say to the player, look, if there were any obvious...
I think most of the time, these guys are probably not playing in your team, so they'll realise why they're not in your team. So you might say that. Like with one player recently, I think a lot of his parts of his game are really good. I think there's a certain area in his game that's weaker. And that's why, unfortunately, we made the decision to go in a different direction.
So going back to the original question about how your coaching style is, has just what you've told us there in terms of what you've been through at Rotherham and how you got the two jobs, has that massively affected how you treat the role of being a head coach? Is it sort of everything all consuming, or are you willing to, have some people who are so sort of relaxed who can rock up, know what they need to do, have the personal connections, which is we've always talked is a massive part of it, or are you full and is it always about the analysis? Is it always about the delivery of what you've found, what you think is going to work? Because I'm always intrigued. I ended up when I was only did it for 3 years, the player coach thing, and I felt I always had to be at the club. I always had to be there doing something to make me seem like I was doing everything that, so I wasn't just, and I was ticking loads of boxes.
Firstly, I hate things that are fake. If our coaches, so someone like Martin Gleeson, for example, who had last year, is now with England. He doesn't have the longest attention span in the world, but he comes in, he goes, bang, hits it, and then he goes. And then before you know it, he would leave at 2:30, 3:00 in the afternoon. The only problem is at my work day, when I start when I finish, you try and finish. So I would like leave the club at 6:00. You generally get in the club just before 6:00, leave after 6:00 at night. But my day would finish. Gleese would ring me at 9:30. You see that from training, you see that. Because Gleese would work like that, go home, chill out, refresh, and then go again. And that's how he worked. And I don't mind coaches doing that. You're getting paid to deliver on your job, and whatever, I don't think I have all the answers. So if you want to work it a certain way and it works, then let's go your way. I used to hate, and I'll bring you something to Hast once told me as well. I hated coaches that ask loads of questions. I felt it was very textbooky and RFU-y. And I'm like, I can't be dealing, just shut up and tell me what you want me to do. And that's, so I, as a coach, probably am that way. I'm a bit more, right, let's just go duh, 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 and get it done. Right, you did that wrong, you did that wrong. But other coaches we have, so that's mine. And I feel awkward as hell. I sometimes ask questions, and I feel really awkward asking them because I hated it as a player. So what I'll do there is I'll use someone else in the staff to ask that question and check for my understanding because it feels awkward.
Dean Ryan loved doing that. Dean Ryan would go, right, what's the... Someone would say something. It's a great answer, but it's not the right one. Yeah. you go around 10 people, you're like, you might as well have just told us.
Hask came to me once and he said, and this was a good thing with Hask, he'd tell you.
Whether you wanted to know.
And he said, Lee, why did you ask us that question? Stop asking that question. Because boys had run a really good line. And I said, boys, are we all happy with this line? We just went straight through and scored. Like, it's a freaking stupid question. Hask comes in and says, honestly, we've just scored. Don't ask that question. Like, it is a good line. Just tell us it's a good line. And it was just from there. And especially now you become the head, you're probably a bit more, I can be myself even more so. But now you're just like, boys, great line. Let's move on.
But I think from my perspective on it as well, it feels like on those moments, you were being, in those early days, kind of, you weren't able to necessarily be yourself because you're working with different coaches and there's expectations for you to do in certain things because other, like you said, you don't mind your coaching staff doing things in a certain way, but others may have a routine and a way of doing it. And I remember that meeting, lads, what can we do better here? And I was thinking, fucking nothing. we've scored. And I said to him, look, don't, because then what happens is...
Over-analyze.
Then you think, well, what could we have done here? Because by asking a question, you expect there to be an answer, when sometimes it's like a rhetorical question. But I certainly know...
Some coaches love that, though. You're going, oh, my God, what's he actually looking at here? He's asked to ask that question. Some coaches love you panicking.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, just tell him it's good. Yeah. Move on.
But I'm interested. I saw kind of, you know, your coaching style, obviously in one aspect of it, but I remember a lot of attention to detail, a lot of kind of enjoyment around it. Would you say that's something you carried on even in a much bigger scale, in comparison to where you were before? Because it seems like the feedback from the guys when you took over in COVID at WASP in particular was a complete change of environment, and that positivity, that kind of enjoyment was what propelled the team onto that Premiership final.
You had to know the group where we were, and there's a lot of guys passionate about the club, and they were just feeling the pressure at the time. The pressure would come on the boys and you could see it. And if you're going to play the style WASP were playing and throwing the ball about, last thing you want is pressure and a lack of confidence. So tried to take that pressure off them and give them confidence, and it worked. And the boys, we had a great period before lockdown, 3 games where we won on the bounce, 15 points. And then you had people coming in the club and go, we're going to win the Premiership. I'm like, calm the freak down. We've just won 3 games. I didn't want to take it away from them. I didn't say that, but underneath I'm going, this guy's mental. Seriously. But, geez, we weren't far away, were we? They weren't that. But it was, there was that feeling going into lockdown. And then you looked at the boys and you're speaking to them during lockdown. And as the months went on and the weeks and the months went on, the boys were training harder and harder. If you come off the back of 3 losses, I don't think we'd have had that period afterwards. But they were so intent on that, had all this pressure and we'd been losing games and now winning and I'm seeing an end and seeing a short run to the final as well. They were in a good position. I think it was around enjoyment, but I've got to keep remembering that as well, that enjoyment part, because sometimes when you lose a few games, you can...
That's what I was going to say. Being sort of an old school player in the starting period where you're coming through in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, you basically, your rugby development was from older players who played in the right area. If you did something wrong, you're basically your own teammate punched you or whatever. How hard is it? How hard has it been though, as a coach, for you to adapt to not going through what you've taken over your career as the norm, right? Play in the right areas, or exit smartly. Don't do stupid offloads. Don't do this. Whereas the game now is about building people up to express themselves and allowing them that environment. Is there always a little blast of the past whispering in your ear going, don't forget about territory, possession? Or is it you trust these young kids that you've got because you've got some unbelievably talented kids. Do you have to put faith back in them and give ownership to them whilst trying to steer it at the same time?
I think it might be the other way now. It's
but that's
my
not
natural
a bad thing
instinct
either.
Will be play, 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 play. And then there's this little man saying at the moment, the game, like, whether anyone wants to believe it, it's changed in a sort of way. And the more, it's how you kick. So people will think about kicking as negative. Like, you kick to break a game up. If you want it loose, break the game up through kicking. Because it just opens the game up. It makes it unstructured. And that's what certain teams will want. So I still think there's the game even more so at the moment seems to be around territory. A lot of games are won by the team that had the least possession, which is... Like there's parts of the game now I'm looking at as a coach and you're going, I don't like that and I don't like coaching it. But if we've got to win, we've got to do it this way.
Yeah.
And that's the hard bit. That is a hard bit as a coach because you're sometimes going against your beliefs, but the game's telling you something and the last thing you want to be called is a dinosaur. The game's changed and I just stick to, we played this way 8 years ago, so it's going to work.
Yeah. I want to go through some of the bits and the bobs that make up your day-to-day, but I actually want to ask you, how you ended up taking over from Dye. I mean, amazing job with Rotherham. And you took them to the playoffs. Was it 2 years on the trot? With a 2-bit bob budget and an amazing achievement.
Hass wage covered the whole squad.
That's remarkable. But just very quickly.
That's a big squad.
Yeah. what did you learn from that period? I mean, at times, it was that squad was held together by sellotape and blue tack and a staple gun in terms of how you're building a team there.
Culturally was, I felt like we got a fair bit right, obviously. You're looking like anything savage. Like, we came to the first meeting and the first meeting addressed the players. And sometimes you look back and you cringe and I went, if you're any good, boys, you won't be here. If I was any good, I won't be here. This is how it's that. Imagine me coming into Walsall and telling Hass that. But that's what we were.
You'd have just opened up the demon that was telling him himself.
Yeah.
But like, oh my God, I start crying.
my dad was right for all these years.
I knew it.
But that's what we said. If you want to be, boys, you're going to have to work extremely hard to get yourself out of it. Our facilities are terrible. Okay. Where we play isn't the greatest, but it's ours. That's what we, and we don't moan. Don't say, oh, we've got this facility, we've got that. They're all excuses. And we just accepted everything. We got on with it.
And
the boys loved it. We used to let the boys have beers on their way bus. They were like all basically 24 and under. It's basically a uni team playing in the championship is what it was.
And what did you learn during that period?
My biggest thing I would say is I can accept errors in games. I just cannot accept lazy people. And that's the one thing that drives me insane. Like I remember as typical facilities, we had to go to a school to train because we only had one pitch. That was where we played. So we're trying to protect it. So we'd go to a school in the winter. And one of the boys was lazy and I've lost the plot. And when I lose the plot, I generally don't know what words are coming out of my mouth next. It's always a swear word and I don't know what. It'll always be followed by another swear word. And then another one might come out. And I don't know where I'm going with it. And
you go red, quite a bit redness.
Yeah, red. Yeah. And it's just like, you just... and it's like, I was like, get to those trees and back and sort yourself. But I must have thrown 30 swear words in. And then I've looked behind me and it's lunchtime and all these kids, I've got over 100 kids watching a session. I've gone, oh my God. Sorry about that.
Detention.
Yeah. What about from a... kind of a man management point of view. So like you said, obviously you've gone with the approach, almost mob mentality, it's us against everyone
else.
Yeah,
that's exactly
always, what it was. Which can always bomb people. Dylan Hartley always says that when they won the Premiership at Northampton, it was a mob mentality. They come in, you know, fill you in, leave, you know, them against everyone else. So that's obviously the basis of it. But from your man management point of view, what kind of lessons would you learn going from player to coach? Like throwing in 50 fucks into someone and then they just burst into tears or they don't work. Were there any real key moments?
So if one thing I'll do is try my best to treat everyone individually, but I'll always bring it back to the team. So for example, a player at WAS that I had, I would get in to him in front of the team. If I thought he was being lazy, I would get into him in front of the team. That was like this player's worst nightmare. He hated it. But actually, the team needed to see me basically on top of him in front of the team.
Yeah.
The team needed to see me do it and address it in front of everyone. But then, so I'd literally smack him around the face in this team meeting. Not actually literally.
not literally.
Love that.
Yeah. Interesting way to go.
Yeah. And then the team would leave. And then I'd go and hug him and say, mate, I had to do that for the team. The team need, and I would try and address it and bring him back because I'd lost him. But I knew I'd lose him. Now it's about me hugging him and trying to get him back part of the team. And that would be a situation I have to try and manage.
I really enjoyed those hugs.
Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like you left them destroyed.
Yeah.
So obviously with Rotherham, you made more than the sum of the parts, which is a heck of an achievement. I remember doing some of those games against Bristol where you ran them very, very close when they had the wobbles trying to come up. When you came to move to Wasps, have you got someone making calls saying Lee's ready to make the move? Did they come to you and say, we like what you've done, we'd like to talk? How do you make that leap from Championship to Premiership?
So at the time, there was only Glenn Delaney had ever done that, made that leap. So it wasn't something that happened. And I actually spoke to a club about doing their D in the Premiership. Basically, my agent rang me and said, Wasps are keen, would like to interview. So I interviewed for the role. Someone obviously must have turned it down because I got it.
But tell me more about that. That is sort of, it's a huge shot and an amazing opportunity for someone who's obviously, you know, on that path. Do you remember is that quite a formal process? Are you suited and booted? Are you tracksuit? Are you chatting with Di? Are you talking to senior players?
I always worry about things like that, what to wear.
Right.
So I went shirt. So it's sort of
halfway
smart cash type thing. Yeah. Didn't want to go over the top.
Shirt and black tie.
Yeah. Well, it's Kev Harmon and Di that were in.
Oh, God, yeah. What was that like to get interviewed by them? Are they quite intimidating? Because Di is actually one of the funniest and one of the warmest human beings, but can also be this 165 kg fridge that just doesn't ice cool, doesn't give you anything. What was he like?
No, warm and welcoming.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Yeah. Pull me in.
Yeah. What was Kev like?
I always say, it's always...
Kev, you know what Kev's like. He was just arrogant. He was just like, we're the best club in the world. You're joining the best. Here's your contract. My contract was by far worse off than I was at Rotherham as a family.
Really?
I should say, yeah. My missus had a job, so we moved down.
Doesn't sound like wasps.
So, yeah, but it was a job that you couldn't say no to. You had people like George Smith, who just, obviously, James Haskell, what a player he was.
Yeah, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yeah.
George Smith, how good was he?
I know, I was talking about you.
You know, I know that, but also, just as the side, we're being serious a minute, how good was George Smith?
Oh, amazing.
Oh, my God.
So, and when you then join up and you get your Wasp stash and you go from Rotherham, which is, you've told everyone that if they're any good, they wouldn't be there, and suddenly you're going into an environment where you've got a guy who has redefined the art of the breakdown during his career in George Smith, James Haskell, 6.5. But was that to the manner born? Do you feel very comfortable doing that? Do you have to sort of check?
Tell you what was uncomfortable. I got married on the Saturday. January, moved house on the Sunday and started at Wasp on the Monday.
Wow, that's like Solomon Grundy.
Also, it was a World Cup year, and Wasp had decided that they weren't going to bring the coaches in till August.
Right.
So the boys just went in and just trained with the S&C, and rugby coaches didn't come in. Now, if you think the championship finishes early, it's April. So I was April to August going, oh my God. Like, I'm just trying to get loads of things planned. But then until you're in the environment, you don't really know where you're going to fit. And there was a lot of planning going on.
Standing from a distance. Who looks like I could use
with
this?
The pads. Yeah. Do you remember him joining?
Guy was very open. No, was open-minded, but also very clearly a dictator. Yeah. So it was. You know, he set the agenda, and then the other coaches kind of fitted around it. And I got on well with him, but actually, it was nice. I do remember meeting Lee and coming in kind of that post World Cup, where actually, because it went so badly and there was so much heat, I was desperate to get back to play at Wasps and to do well, because I thought my England career was over and I was going to be the first time in my life that I was going to have to work with someone. And I met someone like Lee, who was great with, you know, attention to detail. You know, enjoyed the humour. Obviously, my default setting was piss taking straight away, because they gave you that. Remember, we had that really shiny tracks that you looked like you were in a bin bag. But it was a skin tight bin bag.
It wasn't meant to be.
It wasn't meant to be. And I just remember kind of the way we attacked, the way we wanted to play was with ball in hand. We wanted that fluidity, wanted to have the attention to detail, wanted to get us to have the ball in hand. And as a back row player, that's all you want to have.
Yeah.
And I thought it worked really well, actually. We, you know, we played some great rugby because we went to that, was it 2017?
That was the first year I joined. We got to Premiership semi. And we got to Heineken semi.
Yeah, against Sarah. We lost to Sarah's
in 7 points. Again,
and we were playing kind of this really free-flowing rugby. And Lee was like forceful, but did it in a good manner.
Yeah.
You know, because again, as I said, Di did things in a very different way. But actually, it worked. It worked really well. I really enjoyed those times. And actually, that coincided with me probably playing some of the best rugby of my career until that 2000 kind of... 2016 when I had the injury, did the 2017 Lions tour, and then post that year I then
you always played good rugby when your contract was up.
Yeah,
you were very good then.
Yeah, I was really good. Yeah.
We played Toulon. I'll never forget it. Toulon, and you came straight in. We just beat Toulon at home, and this is when Toulon were European champions, and we just beat them at home. Has come straight in, like throws the doors open. Right, Harmon, who Kev was doing the contract, you need to get the checkbook out now, pal.
That sounds like something I do. Oh,
and what was the reaction?
You got the checkbook out.
Yeah. All right, Hess, no, fuck off, mate. We've got no contracts for you here. And like that, you know, South End. Is that a bit South End? It sounds a bit South End, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's the same as your Northern.
Yeah. It pulls out a lot of accents at the moment. We're not entirely sure where
But no, I genuinely really enjoyed that period of rugby. I think it was good. I was captain for some of that as well, which kind of worked really nicely until to the boat trip. And then
let's not go there.
We won't go into detail.
You captained the Premiership final. Yeah. So the year after when we got to the final, didn't you?
Yeah.
Was it that year that you...
Yeah. And then never seen again.
Go back to your journey. So, assistant coach, COVID comes, Di leaves. How does that I mean, obviously with Rotherham, you were last man standing and they sort of gave you the clipboard and off you go. What was the process of moving into the top job at Wasps?
So Di left three quarters of the way through a week where we're preparing for Leicester. We had one session left, I think.
And do you know at that point, does he message you and say, I'm out?
No.
How do you find out he's gone?
My agent rang me. Basically, it was a Tuesday. I'd never done media. BT had come in. Yeah. We just never did media. It was always died in media. So
didn't you do once in media and then we wouldn't stop taking the piss?
No, that was a Sky game. That was a different...
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
You still never stopped taking the piss. You did.
No, I did take the piss.
Yeah, what happened? You did skip?
I just won't say the reason, mate.
We've all had our moments on that channel.
I remember what it was now. It was the England job question, wasn't it?
No, so they asked whether Steve Borthwick was going to England.
Yeah.
I knew he was going to England.
Yeah.
It was common knowledge with him. Quite often, journalists will say things, but if you're in the rugby, you know, don't you? You've been told, mate, he's going. He's signed a deal, he's going. So I said, look, if England come calling for Steve, he's going to go. And so the next day it was all, oh, if England call calling, you've got to go. And you've got this knob jockey just turning to me and going, if England come calling, you've got to go. And that's all I got from him.
And the guy would pop out behind me and go,
yeah. Yeah, it was like, oh, he was coming at me left, right and centre. Thanks for that memory.
I completely forgot about that. I went home crying.
He's beginning to go red, so there's a lot
of swear words coming in a very 30 seconds.
Sorry,
the window.
Yeah, okay. You should have never done media before, you were saying.
Yeah, so I think this was on a Tuesday. And on the way home, my agent rang me and said, mate, I heard Di's leaving. I was hearing rumours last week. And I said, it's honestly the strangest thing that's happened today. And no, we'd just beat Worcester or we'd just beat Bristol. It was one of the two.
Yeah.
I think it was Worcester. And it was like, the strangest things just happened. They've just come in and asked us to do media. I've just done BT and Cozzy's just done radio. And so I think nothing of it. Because he said he thought it was happening the week before. That's what he just said to me. So go home, wake up in the morning. CEO sends you a message saying, can all the staff please meet me in the office at 7 o'clock?
And at that point, you know?
Di's office. And then you go, hold on a sec. This has never, ever happened. So more or less, that gets confirmed, and then we get told that he's leaving. And then they sat around there, and then other parts of the staff leave, and it leaves the coaches. I think Luke Bowen was there, Kev Harmon. I think it might have been us as coaches. And Steve, who just joined the club, CEO, turns around and says, so, boys, not all of you can be in charge. I just need someone to take interim charge. And at that point, Martin Gleeson boots me under the table. He gives me a full-on, size 10, straight up like that. And before he's even finished his sentence, Glees goes, Lee needs to do it. And then Cosby went, yeah, I agree. And ticked straight away, yeah, I agree. Steve turns to me and says, can you do it? And I said, looks like I'm going to have to. And honestly, that's how it all happened. And then we then went and beat Saris, one of those games when everything goes through. We scored 60 points. Everything went for us that night. We were lacking in form, lacking in everything, but every you try a chip kick, it comes off. Everything came off. Intercepts, the lot. We then went to London Irish and won. And then the CEO starts speaking to me and starts going, we've got a pot for this. Maybe it's better we keep you on in sort of that role and spend more on the players.
I bet you were like, no.
So you don't know how much you're going to charge yet.
Yeah, you could be like, we could do that. There's no such thing as a bad idea, but how about you pay me and then we'll get some extra money for the players?
And then we beat Gloucester at home. Then we go into lockdown and he starts briefly talking about it. But honestly, it wasn't confirmed within probably two months into lockdown. And so I'm basically running things and not knowing where it's going to go on, not knowing what the staff, we were changing the staff, where we were going to go. And I still didn't know whether I was going to do the role or not.
There's a theme developing here, which is that just sort of seems to happen and away you go type thing, which is...
Yeah, I'm one of these people that I still play the lottery now because I'm sure I'm going to win.
Yeah.
I just think I've got luck and I'm sure I'm going to win.
If you do, I might get a beer out of you one day because I haven't seen your wallet.
Did you message Di off the back of an incident like that, or has he gone and changed
his
number?
Yeah, so he spoke... honestly, the biggest thing was I'd obviously text Dyers, as you'd expect everyone to do. Because honestly, it did come as a massive shock. The biggest priority straight away was Thomas.
Really?
You think if his son's in there, he's going to be hurt.
Yeah.
So as soon as I left that meeting,
it
wasn't go and address anything else.
Yeah.
It was, where's Thomas? Let's go and find Thomas. Because he was the priority. And again, it's that, you got to understand where he would be at that time. You've got to show some empathy for him. His dad's just lost his job. And he's probably hating everything to do with the club. And so, look, Thomas was unbelievable throughout. And good luck to him. Obviously, he's leaving the club this year to go to Cardiff.
Yeah. So obviously, you absolutely good luck to him. So you get the gig and then you begin to sort of morph into the head coach role. At what point did you feel... What point did you get the corner office, I suppose, and get, you know, your feet properly under the main desk?
Well, Dai's office was upstairs.
Yeah.
And as soon as I took, I never went up there. I was always in with the coaches, and that's where I feel like I am. Since we've moved to a new training ground, probably got a bit big time and got an office there and
coffee machine and pot plant and
secretary. And get people to bring me stuff. No, nothing like that.
Just because I can.
I'll tell you the great thing with the office. My office faces the changing room doors. I'd love to say we designed it that way and it was all reason. It didn't, but that's how my thing. So every day, every player walks out, the office door is 95% of the time always open. And you get to see the players every single day and say hello to them and have that connection, which is really good, because you quite often find head coaches' offices are out the way. Mine, they've got no other options. So sometimes when you're leaving boys out and saying sorry again, you're having that awkward conversation, but actually gets it out the way. That's when I found the back door out.
Climbed to the window.
Yeah, don't get it. What was I going to ask you? I was going to say, I've completely forgotten what I was going to ask you.
Must have been good.
It was. In terms of obviously, you know, moving into that top role, etc. When did you begin to feel really comfortable kind of running the show? Did you feel immediately that you got given the keys, right, we're off and away here? Or did you have to work out quite a bit?
And on that, were your thoughts aligned with what Dai was doing previously? Or did you know there was always something you wanted to change?
Yeah.
I think the more experience you come, the more you go, just do it your way. It didn't feel like I was in charge. It felt like, this is our club. Let's do it together.
Yeah.
See, these were coaches that I sat next to all day, every day. These were coaches that said, Lee's got to do it. And guys who were like really good mates. Still speak to them all the time. The guys that left, good mates. And that's how it felt. It felt like all of us in together. Got great relationship with someone like Launches, who leads the players. And when you're that assistant, you get to know the players really well because you spend a lot more time with them.
Yeah.
And that's probably my challenge as a head coach, to make sure I've got that time with them. It is hard. Players are always going to say, you don't give us enough time, because you can't possibly get around 40-odd people. They all want 30 minutes of your time every week, but you can't do it. Yeah. But your job is to try and get to know the players as best you possibly can. And that's, it just felt like it was all in this together. There wasn't Lee's in charge. It was just us going in that direction.
Seems to be quite a thing that at the moment, because I think Quinns would say something quite similar off the back of Paul Gustard leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
Players having more ownership. Why are you head coach and not director of rugby?
Because you get paid less as a head coach.
Right.
What? Why?
The most truths are told.
Not
really.
I would. We've got a really good team. So Steve, CEO, understood that I was coming in this for the first time at this level. He put a really good team. So the first thing we did was get ahead of performance. We've got ahead of recruitment, and there's lots of things. Sometimes I won't. So with recruitment, I'll always have a say on who we go. When it speaks to the agents, I wouldn't speak to the agents. So the director of rugby would probably do that a lot more. He'd be more off field, whereas I'll try and be always on the field.
Okay.
So there is a difference. I was sort of joking about them.
but not really.
That was interesting as well. I think with Dai's kind of last 2 years, he spent a lot of time juggling stuff off the field, and the job becomes 90% about everything else and 10% about coaching, whereas you seem to have maintained, right, listen, yes, there is some admin role, but actually you're, you know, maybe...
Yeah.
60% coaching.
Yeah, I can easily see how you could get dragged down. I keep reminding myself sometimes of that, and I do get it wrong. I do get dragged away in this conversation. Probably don't spend enough time planning that session, getting that session absolutely bang on, or spending enough time reviewing a session or opposition. And you do get sometimes dragged, but it's that constant reminders. But we've got some good people around. That's what Steve tried to build. He tried to build a good team experience around us. And even if anything, you looked at last year, right, where did we need? We needed more experience. So that's why I went to Steve and asked about, can we go and get John Mitchell?
Yeah.
He gave us the finances to go and get that, because that, again, was something we lacked, and you want a strong team around you.
And do you have the conversation with John Mitchell and saying, this is what I'm looking for, are you interested? Yeah.
Yeah, so how I found out about that was Lawrence called me, because no, it wasn't in the note, he was still with England at the time, but he just handed in his notice. And I tried to get in there before anyone else got in.
Is that an easy conversation? Because obviously your coaching career is doing that. You're on the up, but he is a man who's been there and done it and got more scars from rugby.
You know, when I've looked
most
at people and gone, coaches, that they're worried about their assistant coach and who they get in and someone that's been there and done it. I'm thinking, if you're doing a good job, you don't need to worry.
Yeah.
That's all I think. If you're doing a good job, you don't need to worry. Go and get the best in. If you can get the best, go and get the best.
You know, it's quite a rarity though, because the male ego is a real thing. You see it in all walks of life, and it takes quite a strong and comfortable person to put people in around you, because that's the dream. You put the best people for the job, you put your ego on hold, and you all manage it, but you're clearly in charge in terms of the direction.
So would you get up at 5 a.m, do you?
Yeah, the alarm goes at 5.
Yeah.
I generally leave by 5:30 at the latest.
And what are you doing from 6 a.m?
Eating.
Was it Di who had the bowl of sweets? No.
He used to get his food brought up, didn't he? But he had like the Alan Partridge, he had the bigger plate, didn't he? He had a 15.5-inch plate while we had normal ones. When we went on an away match, he walked past what he thought was like coriander soup, carrot soup, put it in, put it back to the table, peppered it, ate it. And then one of the lads went up after him and realised it was custard, and he ate the whole bowl down of custard and went up for more. Like, that fucking bowl of custard.
So he's bread in it.
Yeah,
so you're in at 6. I mean, is every day intense, emotional, stressful, or are you able to ride with that wave?
There's different days. So Monday, I would say, the review day is by far the most intense for me personally. Yeah. Just because you're going, review the game with the staff. You've had loads of conversations before this meeting. You review the game with the staff, sharing things that we're going to work on. We talk about the week. We sometimes will even get onto what the side's potentially going to look like. We'll announce that till later in the week, but we'll have an early stab. Talk about each individual player that played and the things we wanted to go after. You'll come out there and literally we will roll out of that straight into a leadership meeting. I'll roll straight out of that leadership meeting straight into a team meeting now where I'm going to dress. So you're sort of two and a half hours in, and I'm feeling like this knackered already. And then I've got to be at my best for the review of the game for the boys.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest part of my day now, is reviewing it to all the players. And and then you come from there, and then you go into the backs units, you go into forward unit, and then you go into the training session. By the time you've got there, you've got four people that are wanting a meeting with you as well. So you're sort of putting that onto the back day. So that by far is the hardest day. But yeah, you're always thinking, and even at night, sometimes I haven't even watched training yet. And I'm getting home at 6:30. I'm going, I need to watch training.
So I was going to say, which is the most satisfying?
Winning.
I was going to say, is it the 5 minutes in the change room? Anything that matters is winning.
Not even. There's celebrating good tries, celebrating big wins. Nothing.
What's the worst bit of it?
Oh, the other way. Losing. Savage.
How do you take a defeat?
Well, look, he can't let his daughter win, so he's not going to take...
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have to pretend?
No.
No?
No. I find players, and whether I'm right or wrong, it's just my belief, I find players better when you're emotional. They prefer emotion. So if you're peed off, they'd rather see you peed off. If you're if we've just got a good trial, we've got a great win, they'd love to see you emotional on the side. Maybe it's take the mental games, because there's nothing worse than your coach after a really bad game saying, right, we'll address this Monday. All the players are going, oh my God, what's coming Monday?
Yeah. Are you someone, what point do you hand it over to the players on game day? And do you get very nervous? Are you a sort of a pacer and a thinker, or do you feel the work is done?
No, by far the most. So you're talking about when I would relax. I would relax back end of a week, because I feel like job's done in terms of that. There's only things now I can't do too much to influence this game. So I spend a lot of time making sure pre-match is right.
Yeah.
Conversation. So even with pre-match, I probably do, let's say, 75% of them. But at times I will use other coaches to do it, because it's just the same voice.
Yeah.
It needs everything needs freshening up. But if I wasn't doing that, I'd probably just list a few. I'd write all the players down and just put one thing I'm going to say to them. And sometimes I might say that to them on a Friday. Most of the time I'll say it to them in the warm-up or just before they go out. And I'll just say one thing to them, so it'll be like, Hass, please try and catch this.
And he never listens.
Never listens.
You try catching with fingers that are like, his fingers are like bend.
This narrative about my hand, he's got so out of hand now.
It's not that, like, I coached you.
Yeah. That's your moment there. All right. No, it's honestly, because people seeing highlights again. You actually were quite good. And I was like, yeah, I was really good.
The other thing with Hask, I will say this because he's asked me to say it. I say to youngsters, I remember when he retired, I sent him a message and I meant every word. I still tell youngsters now about James Hask, there's this perception of you on the outside, which is different to actually the rugby player. He may have been, as soon as he drove his Range Rover as JCB out the training ground, he may have been into James Haskell mode, promoting himself and doing everything he can to earn his millions. But when he rocked in, he was into rugby and he was intense, and he would demand, like, he would listen to anyone about his game, and he got the most he could. This guy could not catch a ball, but did he work on it? He worked so hard on it. He ran like he was stiff. He couldn't move. He looked... This guy got 70-odd caps for England because he did everything he possibly could be to be the best rugby player. He was first. He was almost first on the training field. He was definitely last. Extras you'd have to do with Hask, you'd be like, freaking hell, Hask, let me go in. It's getting dark. You just have to tell him he could earn some money somewhere else and he'd be off. He was the last of the training. He worked so hard, and it would be anyone. Remember, like, Dan Butt? Yeah. Like, we had our fitness coach, and he's going through Hask's game with him on his defence. Because if Hask's thinking, even if I get one gem from this that makes me 0.5% better, yeah, I'm going to be better. And that was this guy's mentality. And I say it to younger guys, honestly, this guy maximises potential. He just wanted it so badly.
Hask is into rugby. That has to be a T-shirt. I know. It goes against everything you've spent the last 2 years saying.
And also, yeah, but then I feel like it was a compliment, but also kicked me in the balls.
Yeah. Quite right, too. Give and take.
Most people give me that.
He'll give you a hug afterwards. Exactly.
I love you. Whack.
Quite right, too. So, I mean, in terms of sort of stress levels, and because I'm fascinated to know how much this sort of lives inside your head type thing. Is it all-consuming 24-7 for 11 months of the year, or are you able to switch off at various points?
No, it's consuming. The only time it's not, actually, generally, I found it better with life, and it's just something that's happened, is my daughter now goes, she's just started playing rugby, she's 9 years old, she swims 3 times a week, and that's actually my only time that I can switch off, because I go and just watch her, and that'd be the time. But if you think you can be someone that do this job and just switch off, you're wrong. You're going to get phone calls all the time. You've got to have the ability. So,
what about off season? That, like, when it comes into the off season, will you genuinely down tools for a period, or are you going to have to work?
I'll try to, but like even last year, I went on holiday and we signed Vaifafita in that time. We signed Nizam Kara on holiday. John Mitchell was done at 2:30 in the morning in the hotel. I was walking up and down on my own in Greece in the hotel, just trying to get John Mitchell.
That's what you told your wife. That was
yeah. I snuck out the hotel at 1:30.
Yeah. I'm signing John Mitchell, really? Yeah. You've got WKD in your hand.
That would have worked with Mitch, because he would have been like, we need to go sup some piss.
Yeah.
Do you compare notes with other head coaches and DRIs? Do you have a drink with George Skivington after you play Gloucester, do you? Yeah. And how open and sort of transparent and...
They're all different. So some will be very open. Some couldn't be more closed if they tried. So
who's really open?
Skills would be open. I would find the younger guys are probably a little bit more open. If there was something that happened and I wanted to ask someone, I would go and ask. So I'd be quite open and going and asking. So, for example, this season, there was a feeling we weren't doing enough contact in training. Hask would hate that. And I'm always a believer of you don't need to do that much. It's not... The guys get battered at a weekend. And that's that empathy for the players, again, that you come back to. Like, they're getting battered. You can't ask them to do it, Muzz would say. So I and everyone will have, oh, Gloucester do that, Exeter do that. And you're like, right, I'm just going straight to the director of rugby. I'm going to ask him a genuine straight-out question. And you find most teams are doing next to nothing.
Really?
Yeah. In terms of forwards will be doing more in scrummaging, but how many times do people go live? They don't go live that much in training.
There is always a nice feeling of being underprepared in some ways in that physicality side of it. Be a bit nervous. It switches you on way better than if you've done it all week and you turn up 70% because you're... Sorry.
We played a Premiership final. So no one all real... Everyone forgets what happened in a Premiership final. We had a COVID outbreak the week before, 2 weeks before. And what I think we had 8 guys come out. Then we had another COVID outbreak. We then got tested back end of the week. We had another 3. And then he turned to us and said, one more COVID positive, you're out the final.
Wow.
So there was a gap week, there was a European week. So we came in on Monday and it was, our whole thing was fast start. So we were going to start, we could get a week ahead of Exeter for the final because we knew we were playing them. We had 2 weeks out, they were playing, we were going to get ahead. We didn't train till the following Wednesday because we were off with COVID. We came in to test on the Monday, got our results Tuesday. And if one person was negative, we were gone. We were out of the final. So imagine the pressure on the boys. You talk about I didn't sleep. I did not sleep then. And I had a sore throat. I had everything.
COVID.
And I was panicking. And I basically said to the doctor, I'm going to pull myself out. I won't test. I'll just pull myself out. I won't go because I think I could have it here. It was just because I wasn't sleeping. But I'd actually already had it before the lockdown, before it was fashionable. Have actually been first in England, but
new variant,
and that's what. So all the players and everything building up to the final, we didn't know we were going to play till Wednesday.
Wow!
And you can imagine everyone. I've still got messaging me and I was looking through the other day with launches. Me and launch were texting each other on that Wednesday morning at 4 a.m. saying, and I'm saying, "Have you got the results?" I could see him online. He saw me come online, so it texted me straight away. What's happening? Because that's where the players were.
See, that's all the bits that you just don't think about or read about in the papers or see on a Saturday.
So you imagine the mental thing we've gone through for that week. Yeah. And then we have one training session. So it brings you to your point, and we go into a final. Yeah. And everyone's like, the attention to detail, the panic on everyone.
Yeah.
And the boys get it like that.
How much of a dialogue do you have with Eddie Jones?
We have a fair bit with the coaches, probably speak to him. I spoke to him twice this season. That would be the most I've spoke to him in the season.
Really?
That would be our... I'll probably speak to the other coaches more.
And he calls you to say, I'm looking at XYZ, or you call him and say...
He comes and sees, comes in, says... So last week he comes in and he talks about Launchbury, Jack Willis, Barbary, who were in the squad.
Yeah.
He says, I'm likely to name these three. And I've got these four that are on the radar reserve list. He starts talking about a couple of others that he's just got written down, so a couple of younger guys.
Interesting. And ask for your opinion and your feedback. And
Yeah. We as a club want people to play for England. As much as it can hurt you in the short term, I know the more we've got playing for England, the more chance we'll have having a better team. And when it comes to big games, as long as you can get there, you're in a better position for it. And I know, like, England just drove Hask.
Yeah.
Like, it drives players.
What are your ambitions in the game?
My ambitions... are to win something with Wasps, because I sit there with a Joe Launchbury story at the start of this, back end of last season. He talked about Thibaut Clement, who was with us to the fact he was in our squad. We got him from Loughborough. He played literally 4 months for us. Toulouse then sign him, but he stays with us till the final. He leaves us, goes to Toulouse. So he was within 6 months, he'd been involved in a team that were in the Premiership final. He'd then played in a top 14 and won the top 14 in the final. and he played in the Heineken Cup and won the Heineken Cup. And Launch just turned to me and went, this kid playing for Loughborough a year ago and has won more things in the game than I would. And that hit me hard. I've been with Joe for 7 years. Like, I want Joe to win something in a Wasps jersey. The club means everything to him. And I want these other players in it. And now we've got such a nucleus of younger guys that are just Wasps through and through, have come through. I want these guys to get that feeling of winning something at the club. And that's my number one drive, and I'm not thinking beyond.
Everyone talks a lot about salary cap, and therefore, if you've got ambitions to win things, what is your view on the salary cap as it is?
It's a tough one because I see it from loads of different perspectives. If you're from the perspective of winning stuff and being competitive in Europe, then the higher it is, the better it is. At the moment, we're not losing any English players. So no club's losing that. So that's not the difference. There's more English players playing in the Premiership. The bit that you are losing is those foreign guys, your George Smiths and those. So they're the ones. Maybe in that, sometimes it's the difference. You see Exeter beat us in the final couple of years. But they just added to that squad, didn't they? With a couple of gems, your Stuart Hogs going in and players of that calibre. And before you know it, they've propelled themselves from being up and around there. Yes, they've won it once to going and winning a double. So I would say in terms of that side and winning things in Europe and potentially having a better Premiership, I think the salary cap going up would be a positive. In terms of clubs, though, let's look at from a club side. There'll be several clubs out there that don't want it to go up because they can't afford for it to go up. They've lost so much money during COVID. It's fully understandable. Yeah. So when it's not your money, it's easy to say, yeah, get the cap up so we can go and sign as many players as we want or get potentially better squads. But I think we've got to also look at the big picture for the club. It's competitive as it's ever been, though. Like, you look at us this year, we're ninth in the Premiership. And we've won as many as we've lost. Like, normally when you win 50% of your games like that, you'll find yourself top six, if not pushing top four.
Yeah.
Like, everyone can just beat everyone. It's never been as tight.
Yeah. Right. Do you think that's a bit of the ring fencing thing this year?
Well, I was going to say promotion and relegation, yes or no?
It's hard because I've been in the Championship, but I can fully understand it from a Premiership point of view. If you're in the Premiership, where you are, you say, no relegation. If you're in the Championship, you go, we need promotion and relegation. Yeah. It's you can see the benefits.
What do you think the long-term impact is?
Honestly,
no relegation.
We don't talk about relegation. Wouldn't come into my mind. It's all about looking up, trying to be there.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect the way we play. Like, are we any because of no relegation? Do we play? Are we a bit more open? That's a myth. People just want to win. Like, they'll find any way of winning. I don't agree with the shackles on. But having said that, if you're at the bottom of the league, yeah, it might be a lot different. It might be, let's just play your youngsters because it doesn't matter, yeah, type feeling. That might actually happen if you're in that position.
Interesting. Final question. Open checkbook. You can sign any player in the world right now for next season.
Retired or...
You couldn't afford it.
You already said I can't catch. You definitely couldn't afford
it. You can go anywhere in the world.
Jeez.
You've got to have a Christmas list, haven't you?
Do you know what's coming through my mind now?
Go on.
Genuine. Is if I say a player in a certain position here, it's going to affect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't wonder that.
It would be.
Okay. So that's straight away.
Who is the best player in the world right now, though? Doesn't mean you have to sign him. The most influential player.
I like Colby. I think he, just the way... Now, I've not seen him play properly for, I would say, nearly a year, but the influence he had on the game. Richie Mwanga, say probably 18 months ago when I watched him a lot more, I thought was the individual that changed games more than anyone. When he just said, bang, I'm going to change it now for the Crusaders, I just saw him change games immediately on his own. I've seen Marcus Smith do that for Quinns, yeah, as well. Just when Marcus says, right, now I'm just going to go up a gear, and he changes a game. But I'm not gonna nail one because honestly, that's what went through my mind.
You've already offended your back three and your ten, yeah. Yeah. So that'll be a long queue.
I don't think it'll probably be quite nice with the way you try and play as well.
Yeah, that Dan Robson's gonna be upset.
I think Dan has been. I can't
better than DuPont.
Not better. Not necessarily.
I definitely think.
But he. I feel he's missed out.
That's why he's doing the job.
I feel he's missed out on a lot of cat. Him and Ben Spencer and someone like that have missed out on a lot of cats.
I agree. Dan quality players. Right about Dan Ross. Yeah.
He played well at 10 for England, didn't
I? Played so many years with him at Gloucester, and he never really had his chance.
Instinctively, there's not many better. Yeah. Like when he's just jumping out and running, he can just make games happen. But I would say, if you're talking now, and we've just listed a few names, I think the way DuPont sometimes at the moment is unplayable at times. The amount of stuff we had to do when we played them around him, and then he wasn't playing. I was top off going out. You don't want to see that.
Yeah. Right?
It was good. Hey, come Chunk, on. Do the truffle shuffle.
What a note on which to end. It's been really, really enjoyable. Thank you very much for a fantastic insight into the stresses, highs and lows. He's an easy man to follow.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, I think Lee, one of the best qualities is his personability, his communication with players. You know, I genuinely asked a number of Wasps players, I won't embarrass them by saying them, you know, when Lee took over, I said, let me know, it's going well. Talk to me about this. He said, he's brought back the enjoyment. He's brought back, you know, the confidence. He's made an environment where we feel like we can express ourselves and play. And it coincided with getting to a Premiership final. And I've talked many times before on the podcast and in my books about kind of, it's not rocket science to understand how to get the mentality right with players. It's harder when you're on with pressure. It takes a confident person to be able to deal with that, because you put a game plan and you lose two more games. Suddenly you're looking over your shoulder. Mm. And do you live by the sword, die by the sword, or do you change your mentality? And I think I love what Lee's done with that. We always got on well. He helped me be a better player. I could catch a lot, and he helped me kind of run some pretty good lines, and it coincided with the
dummy
form
line.
Dummy lines. Yeah, there was a lot of that actually. But no, I really enjoy it, and I think I wish them the best of luck. I think Wasps will always have a place in my heart. It's an amazing club, and I hope that they can kick on, and they were so close to getting to a final. And I think good things happen to good people, and Lee's a good person.
Oh man, do you miss characters like this, or is life a lot easier now that we've had to take him on?
You need characters like Hask. If you ever got him where he was stuck for words, you could just see his mind. So sometimes you'd get into it in front of the boys, and you could see the boys loving it because it's Hask. And then you could see his mind ticking. And I just used to say to him, this is where you shout a lot louder than me, Hask. And as soon as you say that to him, he's like, and he couldn't go anywhere. He'd just stay quiet. And then he'd come back to me later with his line when once he finally figured it out.
Text it to him. Right.
He's talking shit. He was buried 99% of the time. And then by the end of it, he'd be like, mate, please stop having a go at me.
Oh, that never happened, by the way.
Right, we'll let you sort this out once we finish recording. Enjoy your summer. Are you going anywhere nice? Got the speedos in the bag and ready to go?
Cool
speedos. Even with that last weekend, it looked like we were out of the play. I still don't book anything, just in hope. So at the moment, the missus will be looking somewhere for us.
We hope whatever is to come goes extremely well. It's been really enjoyable, Lee. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
As we mentioned earlier, we've actually got a bonus bit of content for you now as well, because Hask took a little trip down memory lane a couple of weeks ago to go and see, as we said, one of Wales and Saints' finest, with an old teammate, Dan Bigger. Enjoy.
I'm back at Franklin's Gardens for the first time in over 3 years. I'm sitting in the stand. The sun is shining. The atmosphere is quiet, but I'm joined by a very, very special man. 100 caps for his country in the most recent Six Nations. Captain, a beautiful man with an incredible tan. Awesome hairline, Dan Bigger. How are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you? Good to see you.
Thank you for having... Well, first of all, thanks for having us back at the stadium. I mean, what a turn of events for Northampton. Mm. Obviously, you've been here a couple of years now. You're sitting fourth in the table. What's the mood like at the moment?
The mood is... You know what it's like, Ask. You know, when you're in a team where you pick up... You're on a good run of form. Everything sort of flows a bit easier. The room in the mood in the changing room is a lot lighter, and sort of boys you sort of enjoy coming to work a little bit more. So at the minute, the mood is really good. We're on a bit of a run. I know we had a bit of a slip up in the Challenge Cup against Gloucester a couple of weeks ago, but other than that, our form in the Premiership's been really good over the last couple of months, and put ourselves in a really strong position, ready for Newcastle home last day of the season. We'd like to think that we can get ourselves in there.
you seem to be really enjoying life here. I mean, obviously, I was there the first season you came. Obviously, you know, your professionalism and how you are kind of speaks for itself. But have you enjoyed your time at Saints? Yeah. Do you enjoy it? What have you found kind of culturally about the place?
I've loved it here, has to be honest. I've loved the... I suppose it's a challenge, somewhere different as well. I didn't want to be that player where you finish up for one club for your whole career. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just felt like that was never going to be me, and I wanted to experience something different, see how different clubs run their days and their schedules and things like that. But the biggest thing for me has been I've improved as a player, I think, because I think Sam Vestey's been brilliant in terms of how well he makes a player better every day. And that's what I felt here. I felt like coming into training every day, there's an opportunity to get better every day and improve as a player, whether you've got, you know, sort of 100 caps for your country or whether you're one of the young academy guys coming through. There's an opportunity to get better, and there's no egos here whatsoever in terms of players, coaches. So it's been great. I've loved it. I've loved living up here as well, in terms of we're living just between Oxford and here, and so convenient for getting around, sort of maximising the sort of, you know, get up to Manchester, Birmingham, London, bits and pieces like that. So I think when your whole life is happy as well, you tend to enjoy coming into work a little bit more as well.
So you truly believe that kind of Sam's been kind of a real influence on how you've played and how you've developed?
I think so, yeah. I think he's been, for any young player, I've said to the guys here that I don't think they realise how lucky they are to have someone like Sam in terms of at that early stage of their career. I think he's made a huge difference to my game, how I've understood the game, how I've understood sort of different calling processes, maybe being a little bit more adventurous in my calling process here because of the way we play. It's quite, you know, we haven't got a pack or a team who can strangle teams perhaps like Exeter did for a few years and Sarries have done over the last few years. We haven't got that. That's not our game. So our game is very much moving the ball to space with skillful players. And I suppose my job is to try and facilitate those skillful players. A bit of a breath of fresh air, really, in terms of just having that back in that, you know, however we move the ball, wherever we move it from, whatever decision is, as long as it's backed and it's put out in the right manner, it gives you that confidence to go for it.
Now, this is only my impression from the outside, but it seems to me, even though you've had an amazing career with Wales, sometimes kind of the acceptance from the fans and you being kind of seen as the number one man, I don't always been that comfortable. Is that right in saying?
Or
I always feel like you've been on a bit of a journey with Wales. And it seems like when you come to Saints, from what I'm hearing from you, you're comfortable in your own skin, you're enjoying yourself, and actually you're out of the limelight with Wales in terms of you're able to play your club rugby here, and then you're called up and you feel refreshed. Is that kind of right?
Yeah, definitely, Ask. We've made a bit of a joke in the last Six Nations camp that there's been someone better than me in Wales for 14 years, but I've managed to fend everyone away. So that either says, I don't know what that says about me or others, but... Yeah, I think it has been a bit like that. And I think playing number 10 in Wales is probably that position where probably when you lose on an international day, you know, generally the 10 takes a fair bit of flack. And that's how it's always been, not just for myself, for other people before, and I'm sure it'll be for others after me. But for me, I always found that, I always quite like that side of it though. Hask, I always quite like having the ability to sort of prove people wrong, or when there's a bit of pressure on me, or when there's people who aren't quite convinced. And that's like, I really enjoy it. And I think that makes the highs better. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've had an unbelievable career, Hask, and you've had some unbelievable days, haven't you? But I think you only appreciate those good days because you know how much work it takes, I suppose how bad the bad days are as well. And you're always sort of looking to prove people. And that's what's been for me. I felt a huge amount of pride and happiness and things when you achieve good things. And I was really pleased to get to 100 caps. But almost the biggest feeling for me was almost a bit of vindication. And I was really glad to prove perhaps, you know, people wrong over the years.
Yeah.
So as much as that may be slightly negative, it was almost, that's kind of, been quite a big factor for me in terms of vindicating. And like you say, coming here, it's kind of, I've been looked after really well here in terms of it's been, the coaching setup have been great. They've backed me. And I haven't been, I probably haven't played as much as I would have liked to through international commitments and bits and pieces. But when I have played, I felt, like I said, a real warmth here as well, and it's been great. And I'd like to think that that's shown through my commitment, because I'm not saying I get it right technically every week on the pitch, but I always like to think I give everything for the shirt, whatever shirt I play in, and hopefully that's been received well by the fans. We've got a great setup here, and I suppose just like you said as well, getting outside of Wales a little bit where you could,
because it does feel like a bit of a fishbowl.
Yeah,
and look, you know, obviously everybody lives and breathes rugby in Wales. That it can feel like if the team's going well, then your world beats is, but it can be quite a dark place. Because that's the impression I got, where you know you would play well, but they were always kind of looking over your shoulder or suggesting there was someone else. But actually, there could be nothing better than getting 100 caps and going, by the way, you tried to write me off a million times. Yeah. I'm here, I've been doing the job, and I've got 100. I mean, I certainly, when I got my 50th, that's a line in the sand that no one can take away.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I know it, and I don't want it to come across as negative, but it really was a big feeling for me, that vindication, and almost sort of sticking two fingers up at the doubters and all the people that have wrote you off. And I think, in a way, I'm actually really glad that my career, I suppose, hasn't just been there.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that it's taken some ups and downs. And because, like I said, the moments that are good feel even better then.
Yeah.
And like I said, it is very much a goldfish bowl. And I think with a lot of Welsh players as well, it's very much, a lot of players don't like change or want to stay at home and are comfortable there. And I think for me, it's just been, I've been lucky really to come to a great club, a great place, and just experience something different and differently. The league is great as well. I will say the league is...
Doesn't rain as much as well.
Do you know what? It actually doesn't... Honestly, now, it doesn't rain as much. No. Whenever like my wife and little one are back in Wales or whatever, you speak to them, so ask what the weather's like. Say it's like a bit cloudy or whatever up here. She'll say, oh, it's absolutely chucking down with rain back home and things like that.
Wherever you go to Scotland, Wales Island, it's always just a milky sky. It's just a milky sky any time to return.
Yeah, I will say the weather is... The one thing I will miss is... I have missed here is... being literally about as far away from the sea as you could possibly be.
Yeah.
So like during the summer months when you get some good weather, that is something that I have found disappointing, that we're basically in the middle of the country.
The amount of cash you're on, should we put a swimming pool in your house around here? And you don't need the sea. No?
No, we haven't quite got to that level yet, mate. Not that level yet.
What are you spending it on?
We'll have to see if we can renegotiate the next deal.
Well, mate, you keep playing the way you are. I mean, I just wondered, just on the Welsh thing as well, like, I know you said about negativity. It's actually really interesting because we live in a world where people talk about positivity, but I think most people achieve stuff through negativity. You know, no one ever got anywhere by going, well, you can do it. They got there by going, well, I don't think you can do it.
Yeah.
Well, you're not good enough. You kind of use that. So I think that's a great way to be. I use it, or I did use throughout my career. What was it like captaining Wales as well? Because I think from what I've seen and what I watched, it kind of almost brought the best out of you.
Because
you were playing well, making decisions, kicking the goals, getting drop goals, but also leading, taking over from Alan Wynne. What was that experience like?
If I'm honest, guys, I didn't know how to, when Wayne asked me in the first place, I said yes, because it would have been very difficult to turn it down. But I suppose when I went home and chatted with my wife and thought about it and myself, I thought, how is this, you know, how are you going to be received amongst the boys?
Yeah.
How, you know, you all of a sudden have to, I suppose you're seen in a slightly different light, aren't you, in terms of by the lads and things. So I was a little bit apprehensive about how that would respond and how I would think, is it going to detract away from my game and have I got too much on my plate?
Yeah.
But actually, I really, really enjoyed the responsibility of it in terms of making the decisions, in terms of still running the team, in terms of having input in terms of stuff that we do off the field in camp. And I think I've always found with me that there are more pressure, responsibility, bits and pieces like that are on me. I feel like I respond quite well to it. Sometimes when I'm, you know, when you're not perhaps thinking about the game that much, or when you're a little bit more relaxed about things, I've always found I've got to be right up for it. Whether you're playing, you know, Newcastle away, or you're playing the All Blacks at the Principality Stadium, I kind of feel I've got it. I always have to treat every game the same, because as soon as I switch off for a little bit, I feel like I just drop a little bit in performance.
How did you find your leadership style? Because, you know, I remember playing with you here, stick to the detail, not, you know, like obviously, you know, great around the boys, very, you know, want everyone to have a good time, like a laugh, but you expect standards in training. You'd blow up if, you know, rightly, like most tens do. Did you, once you'd accepted it, made up your mind, what kind of style did you do? Because Alan Wynn, I only experienced a little bit with the Lions, but were you similar to that, different, or did you try and forge your own style?
I tried to do a little bit my own style. I tried to, what I wanted the team to be was from what I was, as my character is sort of scrap for everything, fight for every sort of blade of grass, really be good at that sort of stuff, because there's far more talented players in the squad than myself. So it was very much about trying to install a bit of a mentality where we fight for everything. I didn't want to have any excuses. And if we weren't good enough, then it was down to us or the group as a whole, as opposed to making excuses and looking for shortcuts and things like that. So I think also it helped me in terms of just picking your moments to maybe blow up, because I think if I'm just blowing up every 2 minutes in training, or if I'm blowing up every 2 minutes around the hotel or whatever, then it just becomes white noise, and people are just going to switch off and think, he's off on one again. And also I tried to use a lot of other boys around me, like John Davis, Adam Beard, boys like that, to try and to pass the same messages that I wanted passed on, but from a different voice. And I know I'm sure you'll have noticed it through your career. Sometimes somebody, coach, player, can say the same thing, but if it comes from a different voice, sometimes it can be more powerful or just have a different way of I suppose, of people of dealing with it. So I think that's what I tried to do. I tried to not let it change me, but I also tried to really instill a sort of a little bit of the mentality we spoke about, you know, not a defeatist mentality, but really scrap for everything, fight for everything, and make sure that we put an absolute shift in before thinking about anything fancy coming around.
Yeah, I mean, I always found that if I said anything like, right, lads, let's go and do something, it sort of faded the background. But if you're Northern and say exactly the same thing, everyone's like, wow. So I remember I'd be like, right, lads, we've got a real big game today. You know, we can't mess around. And if Northern goes, right, lads, I'm not being funny, but we've just got to make
it sound, it does sound better, doesn't
everyone's
it?
Like, wow, that's so inspiring. And I'm like at the back going, I said exactly the same thing as that, but I just said it in a posh middle class Berkshire accent. So no, I know what you mean there. Just talking about Wayne Pivac. So I knew nothing about him, obviously, before he came and took over the Welsh job. I hadn't really seen much about him. I knew, obviously, following Warren and Sean was always going to be very difficult. We interviewed him for our podcast, and Tins and I were instantly like, wow, we want to play for that guy, properly gets it. You know, we sort of really, really liked him. What's your kind of relationship with him like? Did it change with the captaincy?
No, it's been good. Wayne's big strength is keeping, because I suppose like most head coaches for national teams don't do loads and loads of coaching as such. It's very much, it's almost like a manager's job, isn't it? So his real strength, I thought, was keeping quite a happy group together and keeping the group in terms of quite relaxed around the team room on training.
Yeah.
We had a tough autumn, I think it was 2020, the autumn, which was tough. And then we came back in for the Six Nations in 2021. And it would have been really easy for Wayne or for coaches to really sort of tighten up and, you know, no smiling, no fun. You know what it's like when you've been in environments like that. But he actually sort of went the other way and really encouraged us to be sociable in the team room in terms of, especially during a COVID period, it was always going to be a bit more difficult. But he was really, I thought that was a big, big part of Wayne, the success we had was in terms of keeping the boys quite relaxed and allowing the boys to have some real quality time, as opposed to really sort of turning the screw and putting a bit more pressure on the boys. So that was a really good part. And I think we've obviously made a lot of changes to our team over the time Wayne's been in charge. I think hopefully he's sort of found that whatever his best team is now. And I think we'll look to sort of really get some continuity in selection as opposed to maybe swapping and changing. But I think for me, certainly, Wayne's been really good in terms of, you know, played a lot under Wayne and really being quite open about things. And like I said, kept things quite relaxed, because I think that's important. You know what it's like when you're in a camp environment. You can't be rugby.
100% all the time. 100%
all the time.
Out, yeah.
So I think that's been a massive strength of his.
Where do you think Wales are at the moment? Because we talked about before the Six Nations, we said France the team to beat. We felt Ireland were there or thereabouts, England were there or thereabouts, and we said actually, if we looked on paper, yes, there were changes. Wales still got a great number of players. Yeah. Scotland now much more strength and depth, you know, players across the way, and it kind of finished like we said it would.
Yeah.
I think I know. Obviously, England were lucky in that last game against Italy. I mean, where do you think this team could go? Are they in a good place?
Yeah.
Are you excited?
I mean, obviously, the last weekend was really disappointing in terms of the Italy defeat. That was a real tough one to take, I think, for a lot of, you know, for the whole group, really. I think we've like you mentioned, there's a lot of players that need to come back. And I think we're probably not quite in the position of perhaps a France, an England, and perhaps even Ireland, where you lose a few real key men.
Because you've got a lot of guys with a ton of experience, but they are kind of near the top end now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just about making sure. I think it's been good for us over the last year or so to develop a little bit of strength and develop the depth of players. But ultimately, you're judged on results internationally. And over the last campaign, results were good enough. So we're going to be under a little bit of heat. But
did you get much of a backlash, by the way? Because I was away in France.
Yeah.
And I remember I was in a bar. And I, you know, people get very upset when I say that, you know, I was happy for France to win. Like, I'm obviously, you know, an England supporter, but when Wales were playing England and you guys, that last 6 or 7 minutes, I thought you were going to come back and do it. I wanted Wales to win because it was the narrative. I thought it was amazing. Yeah. That's why I'm interested in. Obviously, from your point of view, you were on the field. Can you disassociate yourself with the fact that actually that Capuzzo scoring that incredible try and making it, obviously it's not easy to stomach, but I wondered, after the game, my biggest concern was not whether you boys would get over it or whether you're in a bad place. Was there a backlash? Was there some nightmare situation going on? Was it
no, okay? It was quite calm. I mean, it was obviously like disappointing in terms of afterwards, you know, everything is pretty low. And but I'm hoping that it's going to be a real watershed moment for us as well, in terms of that there will be sort of, whether it be changes, whether it be a line in the sand now that sort of that we need to really sort of knuckle down and get back to where we were 12 months ago, really. And for me, actually, it was just brilliant because a lot of the boys had to go back to Wales and probably live amongst it for a couple more weeks.
Yes.
I was able to come back up here. We had two games. I think it was London Irish.
Because you're not on social media, are you?
No, no, not at all.
Is that a conscious effort?
Yeah, definitely a conscious effort because I see, I always feel vindicated by it because after a tough loss or you haven't played well or whatever, you get on the bus and all you can see is boys just scrolling through and seeing what comments are. And I think, do you know what? I'm so glad that that isn't me.
Yeah.
So I'm just, you know, I go back or I check the football scores or whatever. Can't see anybody slagging you off then sort of thing. So I think there's definitely a conscious effort of that. So I think that's helped me as well in terms of probably not seeing it personally.
I think it's the best way to be. And actually, when I was doing it, putting this all together, the questions, I thought you might be on social media in some form. But actually, I think it's the perfect thing because if you've been using that negativity, you felt like with Wales that people looking over your shoulder, trying to find other people. If you're able to be mentally strong, come here, enjoy your rugby, feel like you're getting better, you know, take the honour of playing for Wales as captain and then not carry it with you. I think that's probably the best,
yeah,
the best
100%.
Way.
Yeah, I reckon if I'd have been on social media, they'd have finished me off about 5 years ago. I wouldn't have survived 14 years, no way.
It's so interesting. I never knew that. And I would say, like, without obviously your mental resilience is one thing, but I think without people ramming it down and adding self-doubt to you, I think that's a brilliant way. I mean, just finish the last question. I mean, obviously the Lions, I know it was disappointing. It's kind of three, you know, started all three tests. Where do you want to go with your career at the moment? What is there left to do? What do you see happening the next couple of years?
I think I get jealous. I do get jealous when I see teams and players playing in semi-finals, finals. That is a massive, massive aim for me, is to really push this club in the next year or two to hopefully we can do it this year. But I do get jealous when I see, when I find it really difficult actually watching those games.
Because that's what the whole, I mean, no, people always, especially in 2020, talk about taking part.
Yeah.
But for me, yes, one of the biggest things I miss is the bond between players and sitting down seeing mates. But winning makes everything 10 times better. It makes much more, many more memories.
Those are where your memories from. Yeah. You know, when people ask you what was your best memory in your career or for this club or for your country, 9 times out of 10, you relate it back to when you're winning things. And I think I've been lucky enough to be successful with Wales, with the Ospreys when I was there as well. And I think that kind of, once you've had a bit, it's almost like you want more and more and more. So I really want this club to be successful in the next, either whether we can do it this year or next year. Because I feel like this league for me, week in, week out, on the course of a season, is an absolute, you know, it's a marathon. It's an absolute brutal league in terms of, because we could rock up, you could play Newcastle here, say, for argument's sake. And if you're off it by 10%, you're getting done over.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as
well, an easy
it doesn't
game,
matter if you're playing Saris, Newcastle. If you're off it a little bit, you're getting done in this league. And I think to achieve that would be brilliant. I'm hoping to get to the World Cup if I can scrape another 18 months out of me, international level, and then probably reassess things from there. Right. And I've got another year left here with Saints, which is great. And I think probably just reassess things from then. Right. I'm really quite open and honest about it, to be honest, because I really don't know what the future holds, but get to the next 18 months time World Cup and probably make a call from there then.
Mate, it's great to see you in a good place. Thank you so much for your
pleasure
time.
Ask.
We'll catch you all soon.
Fascinating insights on this week's Good, Bad and Rugby with Wasps. Thank you again, Lee, with Northampton Saints. Thank you again to Dan. We have been the Good, the Bad and the Rugby. We will see you next week for another episode on the road. Where we'll be, nobody knows. The life and times of the Good, the Bad and the Rugby. Enjoy all that's to come this weekend. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.